the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to have a very special conversation with a very special guest. Wesley J. Smith is one of the world's preeminent bioethicists, and he's really also a reporter. He's wandering around the world looking at what we really need to know about in order to be informed about the challenge to humanity, to human dignity, and to human happiness posed by so many of these bioethical crises. Wesley J. Smith is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He's also a special consultant at the Center for Bioethics and Culture. You can go to his blog at Secondhand Smoke, which is just wesleyjsmith.com. He's the author of Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die, and the book The Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. We'll get to that conversation in just a moment. Let's talk about why it's important. If you look back over this past weekend, what's been talked about? All kinds of things have been talked about. The Palin-Biden debate has been a major focus of a lot of the chatter in the conversation. Certainly the economic bailout plan adopted by Congress, finally, that's had a lot of conversation. And rightly so. Those are big frontline issues in the news. But do you know, when you look at the ocean, it looks like one big body of water. But one of the things you need to keep in mind is that that one big body of water has different levels of water under the surface, moving in different directions at different times, different temperatures. And what looks like a very placid, simple thing when the ocean is at rest is a misapprehension. It's not at rest. There are currents in that water, different levels of water. There are rivers flowing within the ocean, and that's the way it is within our public life. You can look at what appears to be the big issue without realizing that there are all kinds of issues underneath. And that's why we're going to be talking about bioethics today. It's because in the middle of a presidential election campaign, in the middle of all this talk about the economic crisis, and with all the chatter about so many different issues, it's easy for some very fundamental questions to get eclipsed. And you can't come up with a more fundamental question when it comes to humanity than whether human beings are actually special or not. If human beings hold a distinctive place in the cosmos or not. Whether human beings are just one other animal among other equal animals or not. Let me just tell you some of the things going on in terms of the field of bioethics right now. So some of the things that should have our attention. For instance, there are debates going on as to whether or not nature should be granted rights. Debates going on as to whether animals should be treated like humans and whether apes should be given human rights. There are all kinds of debates like that going on, and we're going to be talking about them. One of the great debates right now has to do with the Constitution. Has to do with the interpretation of whether human life has special dignity, and that, of course, relates to the presidential campaign. On the election, in the ballot right now, facing voters on November 4th in the state of Washington is a proposal for assisted suicide. And again, that comes back to whether we understand human beings to have lives that are defined by a creator, or whether we believe that human beings are basically just another animal, and that we should exercise our own autonomy to decide when we will die. And then, of course, you have some of the arguments that are being brought forth, even in the midst of that controversy, having to do with a slippery slope that is indeed slippery, because a right to die quickly becomes a duty to die. We'll be talking about a lot of those issues with Wesley J. Smith coming up in just a moment. First, a review of some of the issues in the news. Of course, the news is filled with matters economic and political, but there are other things out there, too. Some of them have at least some relation to some of the things we'll be talking about today. Newsweek magazine is out with a story about the part-time vegetarians. They are called the flexitarians. Now, the folks, you need to know about these folks. These are people who want to be part-time vegetarians. Now, this is what Karen Springen of Newsweek reports. She says, for the last 15 years, Don Jackson Blattner has been what's now called a flegetarian, or an almost vegetarian. She eats lots of fruits, vegetables, nuts, barbecued tempeh, and veggie burgers with guacamole. But she sometimes indulges in a pork chop or her grandma's pot roast. It might seem like being a vegetarian of convenience isn't particularly inspiring, but a growing number of experts and even some famous foodies are fans. They say that cutting back on meat, rather than abstaining completely, may be a practical compromise that benefits our bodies and the environment. Okay, you following me? Now, Dawn Jackson Blattner is a vegetarian, a registered dietitian. She is also the author of The Flexitarian Diet, The Mostly Vegetarian Way to Lose Weight. be healthier, prevent disease, and add years to your life. Again, she's a part-time vegetarian. She says it gives you the health benefits of a vegetarian diet without having to follow the strict rules. We know that people live longer and live healthier when they eat vegetarian, but it's just too hard to do it 100% of the time, end quote. Now, I got to tell you, I'm reading this out loud with a smile. Because this whole idea of being a flexitarian, just to me, is the ultimate postmodern way of trying to be all things at once. And that's the way we as human beings are, right? We want to be cool, but we also want the pork chop. And we want to be vegetarian, but grandma's pot roast is still mighty fine. Pretty hard to turn down. And so we turn ourselves into part-time vegetarians. Guess what a part-time vegetarian is? A carnivore. It's just a carnivore not always eating flesh, not always eating meat. You know, it comes down to the reality that we want to define ourselves in so many different ways, and I just have to laugh at this, and I know there are things in my life others could see from outside and laugh at as well, because we are so self-deluded that we will fool ourselves into thinking we're something we're not. And in this case, you have part-time vegetarians. I guess by this, you know, we could all be part-time anything because we're not eating meat all the time. I guess right now I'm a part-time vegetarian because I'm not eating meat right now. As I'm talking to you right now, I'm in a vegetarian moment. I'm not eating vegetables either. But I can be a flexitarian right here on the air. And we could all be flexitarians as we're going around. And you could be a flexitarian during the same meal, I guess, while you eat vegetables at one point and then meat at another point. So long as you're eating vegetables, you're a vegetarian. The minute you turn to the meat, you're a part-time vegetarian. You're a flexitarian with a pork chop or grandmother's pot roast. Now, am I making fun of Dawn Jackson Blattner? Well, a little bit, yes. I'm making fun of her proposal. I'm making fun of the fact that Newsweek magazine found this newsworthy. But to tell you the truth, when I saw it, I thought there is something there to talk about. And what that is the fact that we're all trying to find our way in the midst of an awful lot of confusion. And if we can find a way to have it all, we'll take it. I mean, that's the bottom line. If we human beings can have it all, if we can eat the roast beef and still be a vegetarian, well, that's cool. It just doesn't work. There are a lot of things out there to watch, and in particular, we need to be aware of the fact that there are Christians around the world that are suffering persecution right now. And if you're looking at your newspapers over the weekend and you're looking at some of the things that have been going on, you're going to see that there's intense persecution right now of Christians in some places of the world, in particular in India. But not only in India, there are things that need to be watched in nations where we have even a very direct political and military interest right now. The Archbishop of Baghdad has warned of how fear is continuing to drive Christians out of Iraq. Now, that's very interesting. You're looking here at the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Iraq saying that Christians are just being driven out of that country. He spoke of a paralyzing fear that is still gripping the country's Christian communities. I want to tell you something right up front. It would be a moral disaster if the United States goes to such a length to build and to protect and to establish a democracy in Iraq if that means it's for everyone but the Christians. If it means that religious liberty is sacrificed on the altar of establishing what we will call a democracy. When I saw this story, it immediately caught my attention because it said everything to me about what should be our humility and understanding that if we actually try to tell people they have a democracy and they have human rights and we have sacrificed religious liberty on the altar of getting there, we have really drawn a lie to what we believe about human rights. Very real persecution remains a huge threat for Christians in some areas, say authorities there in Iraq, who also explain that in other areas, coexistence under pressure means that Christians, now get this, are forced to adopt Islamic practices, including dress. In other cases, Christians have been told outright to leave, with an implicit threat of physical violence if they do not. Now, there are some there in Iraq who are talking about new signs of hope, but the reality is that there are fewer Christians in Iraq right now than when we began this effort. And that ought to be a cause of concern to every single American, and especially to every single American Christian. You know, when we start talking about religious liberty, we get into pretty sensitive territory here, and I want to tell you why. It's because we have allies around the world who are not allies on that cause. And one of the things we as Christians must always understand is that our ultimate allegiance is to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And even as we respect the absolute responsibility of our government, our elected leaders, our representatives to establish a foreign policy that requires the United States to have allies, we cannot have an alliance with a country that denies or restricts human liberty without a grave wound to our conscience. And we certainly cannot allow America's responsibility in the world to be tarnished by any kind of forfeiting of religious liberty as something of an unnecessary human right. I mean, even looking back in the 20th century, whether it was Woodrow Wilson or Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when Americans spoke to the world about what human rights really represented, religious liberty was right there at the forefront. It was at the forefront of the reason this nation was established. It's at the foundation of our understanding of democracy and human rights. We better be really, really careful to make sure we're saying that and making that real wherever we go in the name of human rights. Back for Intelligent Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. One man that seems to be watching across the entire field of bioethics just about with a keener eye than anyone else is Wesley Smith, who's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He's also the special consultant to the Center for Bioethics and Culture. His blog is Secondhand Smoke, which is found at www.wesleyjsmith.com. We're pleased to have Wesley Smith on the program today. Mr. Smith, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. However, reading some of the things that you write about on your blog and some of the things that we have commonly noted in recent developments, I wonder if I should be feeling so well.
Yeah. Well, the word insomnia begins to come to mind, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but also the frightening realization that there are people who are trying to redefine life and death. And, you know, if you say you're not feeling too well under some circumstances, you might be in more trouble than you think.
You know, I have come to decide that 2008 is actually the most radical that we have had in many, many years. And I say that because of several things that have occurred. First was Spain is about to legalize the Great Ape Project. That reduces humankind to the status of an ape and creates what's called the community of equals among human beings, chimpanzees, gorillas, bonobos, and orangutans. And the idea of that, of course, is to knock human beings off the pedestal of exceptionalism. Towards the end of undermining Judeo-Christian moral philosophy in general and theistic religion in specific, because if all we are is an animal in the forest, then the whole point of theistic religion is eroded. Similarly, the European Court of, and get this, human rights has taken an appeal from Austria in which some animal rights fanatics tried to get a court in Austria to declare a chimpanzee to be a person and fully entitled to legal personhood. The Austrian Supreme Court said no, but the European Court of Human Rights is taking that case. And
okay,
that's very alarming, because if they were going to just say, well, this is ridiculous, we're not going to do it, they could have just rejected the case. But by taking the case, while it doesn't assure that a chimp will be named a person, it certainly opens that potential. In another very alarming situation that just arose, the country of Ecuador adopted a new constitution in which it specifically and explicitly gives rights to nature. I'm not kidding. Gives rights to nature under their new constitution. And this has been at the behest of a group called the, hold on just a second and I'll get the exact name of the group, and they're an American group, and Ecuador is controlled by a acolyte of Hugo Chavez.
Right.
And so it's this Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, which has said on their website that their intent is to, quote, change the status of ecosystems from being regarded as property under the law to being recognized as rights-bearing entities.
Wow. Well, let me ask you some follow-up questions here for just a moment.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the primates for just a moment.
Sure.
In Spain, the new government, about 3 years old, clearly came on with a very liberal agenda, liberalizing abortion law within Spain. And I thought the most ludicrous thing was, you may remember that this new government promised to equalize the domestic sphere so that it would mandate that men would do an equal amount of housework with women. Turns out that they've given that up. I guess nature was just a little too intractable on that one. But when you come back to the Great Ape Project, let's track that through for just a moment. Isn't Peter Singer involved with that?
Yes, and what's really alarming is that Peter Singer values are beginning to triumph. Peter Singer co-founded it with an Italian philosopher in 1993. Think about that. In 15 years, they've gone from being laughed at, essentially, because they want to have United Nations declaration declaring human beings a part of a moral community with apes, and giving apes the right to, it's like the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to be free from torture, meaning not used in medical experiments. In 15 years, they've gone from nothing to the first country about to formally legalize the Great Ape Project and instruct its diplomats to try to then move this agenda forward through the international sphere. Peter Singer is also known as the foremost proponent of infanticide. And in the Netherlands, as part of the euthanasia program there now, even though it's technically illegal, it's quite open, and doctors admit and even write articles that how they are engaging in eugenic infanticide in the Netherlands, to the point of about 90 babies are killed a year there based on quality of life judgments. So while Peter Singer, some still say, oh, he's a fringe character, as I'm looking at the year 2008, his values are beginning to prevail, and it is very alarming, and it should be a wake-up call for anybody who believes in the sanctity and equality of human life, anybody who believes in universal human rights, to stand against these agendas. Because if you turn human beings into mere apes, and if you say it's okay to kill babies if they're going to have a low quality of life, the concept of universal human rights utterly collapses. And then when you say that nature has rights, is a rights-bearing entity, as the Constitution of Ecuador now does, then mosquitoes have rights, and lichen has rights, and pond scum, then the very concept of rights is undermined, because it becomes almost a meaningless phrase, kind of like a currency with a wild inflation. I mean, if a mosquito has a right to exist and to thrive as the same as a human being, if nature becomes co-equal with man, you've created a nature religion, and you have demoted man to just another denizen of the natural world, which has no greater value than any other denizen. It is a very worrying thing, and it can totally undermine human rights, Judeo-Christian moral philosophy of the importance of the human being, and, of course, theistic religion.
You know, the whole issue there of Peter Singer, you mentioned that some people consider him a fringe figure. You know, that's kind of hard when you consider the fact that he holds one of the most prestigious endowed chairs at Princeton University. And even when prominent alumni, for instance, the Forbes family, threatened to and followed through on removing massive donations from Princeton because of the addition of Peter Singer, it didn't faze the administration one iota.
Well, you have to understand that high universities, particularly among the elites, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, having that kind of radical idea is a job requirement. If somebody, you know, he does not even have a PhD, Peter Singer, and yet he is at Princeton. If somebody with his credentials from a perspective like you have on these very same issues knocked on the door to get a job at Princeton University, you'd be tossed out on your keister.
Well, in terms of Peter Singer, just so that our listeners understand how radical his thought is, this is a man who for years, not just recently, but who for years, long before he was elected to tenure at Princeton University, was a man who promoted the idea that, for instance, human infants are not persons, but some cows and pigs could be, because they have self-consciousness, ability to foresee the future, and the ability to use language or communication that that infant does not yet have. And so, as Mr. Smith was saying, he is a proponent of infanticide. I want to go to this Austrian case for just a moment as we're getting ready to go into a break. If a court for human rights takes a case from a primate, or even considers to take the case, hasn't it basically decided that the primate is a human under its jurisdiction withstanding?
Not quite yet, but it certainly seems to be going in that direction, because they could always say this is, you know, we've considered this and we reject it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole issue, first of all, is standing, and if they're even considering the case, even if they come back and say that they're not going to take the case, they have done the damage already, I'm going to argue.
Well, I think there's truth to that, but the chimp is not yet the actually named litigant.
All right, well, just give him time. We'll be back to continue this conversation with Wesley J. Smith of the Discovery Institute. You can go to his blog at wesleyjsmith.com. We'll be back in just a moment. We're not taking calls today, because this conversation is going to really be focusing on some things we want you to hear about. We'll be back for Intelligent Conversation coming up on the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. My guest today is Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute, also special consultant for the Center for Bioethics and Culture. We're talking about a review of certain issues that certainly should have your attention in terms of the field of bioethics, things that will impact our life and our culture. And there are some frightening things out there. You can see a lot of them at his blog, Secondhand Smoke, which is just wesleyjsmith.com. Mr. Smith, let me ask you to talk a little bit about what's going on with PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You've had some fascinating stuff on your site about this.
Well, PETA is a one of the most subversive, in my view, organizations in America with regard to the importance of being human, human exceptionalism. And they do a lot of things, some of them really nasty and others kind of funny, because they're always addicted to getting attention. And one of the things they did to get attention was they went to Ben and Jerry's ice cream, and they urged that instead of using cow milk for ice cream, they used women breast milk for their ice cream, which, of course, is a ludicrous suggestion, but it got them in the news. Another thing they did, which is far less benign and shows you the true, frankly, dark heart of the people who run PETA, is they put up a billboard in New Jersey, I believe, and it, instead, you know, the advertisement got milk, but the, instead of that, they put got autism. And they tried to put a link, which is false scientifically, between drinking milk and a child developing autism. And so that is that's the kind of mendacious, false assertions that PETA often makes. That I think is very alarming, because you know you could scare people, you could cause a lot of problems with that kind of wrong
absolutely.
Advocacy.
Well, you know, actually, that story got some coverage on ABC News, the PETA campaign linking milk and autism. And I wanted to take some time here just in case some of our listeners have heard it, because that's the kind of thing that can really alarm parents and families.
Exactly.
Just go at this for a minute and debunk that claim.
And it's using children with a serious condition as pawns in their publicity hounding. But in fact, the ABC story, which I read, every scientist discussed, and even the members of the autism association, said this is crazy. There's no link in scientific studies between autism and milk. It's just something that PETA takes a little snippet that might have been mentioned in a study, and runs with it, and basically lies. I'm writing a book. In fact, I've completed it. I've turned it in, but it has not yet been published, on the animal rights movement. And often PETA will say things, particularly with regard to medical research into animals, which is a sensitive subject because nobody likes the idea of having to use animals in medical research. But they will say there's no human benefit received from using animals in research. And that is just fallacious. Of course there is. In fact, it is required as part of the Nuremberg Code, both to protect human rights, because, you know, once you start using some of these drugs or other things in human beings, people could get hurt. And it is important to learn in terms of basic research. So PETA is a destructive force, but they're not aiming at people like you and I, Dr. Mohler, who, you know, we've got some years under our belt and we have experience and so forth. They're aiming at the young people. They're aiming at people who've been raised in a relativistic milieu and maybe hunger for some hard doctrine. And so they come in and say, you cannot use animals for any purpose. Realize the animal rights movement, as opposed to animal welfare, wants to end all domestication of animals, period. And so Ingrid Newkirk of PETA believes that humans and animals have moral equality in terms of moral value. She has put it this way, a rat is a fish, is a dog is a boy. And of course, that undermines human exceptionalism, which, as I keep pounding the desk about, is required for human rights and for treating the most weak and vulnerable among us as us rather than them. Either human life matters simply and merely because it's human, that is, we don't have to earn our value, or Peter Singer is right that human beings do not have intrinsic value based on humanity, and so there must be some other criteria that we adopt that will decide which of us matters and which of us doesn't matter, or who don't matter. And when you do that, it's who has the power to decide, and that leads to tyranny.
Our guest today has been Wesley J. Smith of the Discovery Institute and the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity. He watches this bioethical sphere just about as well as anyone. You can go to his website at Secondhand Smoke, which is just www.wesleyjsmith.com. You're looking at some of the most important issues facing humanity here, because there is no more important issue in terms of the direction of this culture than whether or not we understand that human beings are distinct from the rest of creation. Once you remove that human distinctiveness, then just as Mr. Smith says, you find yourself absolutely in a situation of a moral meltdown. And as he says, human rights, even the basic concept of human dignity, is therefore undermined. We'll be back with Intelligent Christian Conversation on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
All right, a lot was put on our table there. Let's think about it. This is a good opportunity for just a few minutes of seminar on let's try to think like Christians about this. One of the issues that was raised here is this billboard that PETA has put up, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Wesley Smith well described this organization as far off on the extreme. It's a radical organization, so radical that, as he said, Ingrid Newkirk, who's the founder of the organization, has said that a boy, a human boy, is just another animal. And they stress this in every conceivable way. By the way, what is behind this whole idea of ice cream made from human milk is the fact that a firm in Europe just declared it was going to do this, whether it's just as some kind of scandalous publicity stunt or what, I don't know. But PETA took it as an opportunity to come back and say, look, here is what is required by justice. And their understanding of justice is we have to treat human beings just like animals and animals just like human beings. Now, if you buy into that worldview, and Wesley Smith's exactly right, it completely undermines human rights. But let's just talk about what that worldview would look like. If you buy into the worldview that a human being is just the same as any other animal and any other animal is just the same as a human being, then why are you living in the house and the cattle and the herds outdoors? Why do you have an orthodontist and your dog doesn't? Why is it that there are animals in zoos rather than human beings with the animals coming by looking? Obviously, you can't live with this worldview. You cannot. You cannot consistently live with this worldview. Otherwise, Peter Singer should be living out in the pasture. And one of the apes he cares so much about should be holding his endowed chair at Princeton. And so this is a lie. It is fundamentally a lie. And one of the things we need to do as Christians is think. And sometimes thinking is really hard work, but I got to tell you, on this one, it's not even hard work. On this one, all you have to do is imagine the kind of world that would be required by that worldview, and you end up with a world no one wants to live in. It is a dystopia, the opposite of a utopia. Rather than a place of perfection, it is a place of horror. And then I want to go back a moment to the billboard that PETA has put up. That billboard says, "Got autism. Studies have shown a link between cow's milk and autism." Well, I can give you a guaranteed link between cow's milk and autism. All right, you're going to get this? Children with autism probably drank cow's milk. All right, there's your link. Now, I drank and drink cow's milk. You could also put it up and say that people who do not have autism drink cow's milk. In other words, a link can be absolutely nonsensical. It has nothing to do even with correlation in the case of most of these studies, and certainly not causation. But let me tell you the intellectual fault that is behind this in terms of how many people will see that billboard and jump to another conclusion. And I want to say this because I have so much sympathy, especially for families that are dealing with autism. When you're dealing with something that difficult, that vexing, that troubling, that inexplicable, the natural human response, a natural intellectual fault, is to try to find simple causation. In other words, we want to reduce everything. It's just the tilt of our minds, the way our minds work. We want to reduce the complex to the simple, especially when it comes to causation. We want to think it was just this, not that. So, for instance, let me give you another example. Take the damage that took place in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans in the wake of Katrina. What caused it? Well, writ large, it was a storm that caused it. But you'll hear people say, no, it was the fact that the levees didn't hold. The levees caused it. No, it was the fact that people weren't there immediately to respond with the kind of help that would have kept him from happening. No, that isn't simple either. You can start going down to saying, you know, well, what was the structural reason why the levees didn't hold? Well, no, it's because the wetlands out beyond and the coastal barriers were removed. You can start looking at this. Any one of these things may have played a part. But the reality is there is no simple causation. And in terms of natural forces, there's not even a simple causation of a hurricane. Why do some tropical depressions turn into hurricanes and others not? The world is just not usually reducible in terms of the most difficult questions to simple causation, other than, here's the big one, human sin. If you're looking for simple causation for problems in the world, the only simple causation is Genesis 3, is understanding that the world, the entire creation, was corrupted and distorted and imperiled by the reality of human sin and God's judgment upon that sin. So when you start looking at this, I just have sympathy for parents who are going to be driving down the highway and they're going to see this. And even if they are just really aware enough to jump to the conclusion it can't be that simple, you know, there's got to be just a little tug on their heart saying, I wish it were that simple. And so one of the things we need to do as Christians is often look at simple answers to complex issues and realize that might be part of it, might be in this case, I'm going to reject even the might be outright. But even if it's a part of it, it's generally not the whole thing. I want to go back to what he said about Ecuador. Ecuador voting on granting rights to nature. Now, here's one of those definitional issues. What is nature? I think the average person who hears in our culture nature thinks of walking outside, seeing the Grand Canyon, seeing a leaf, seeing a pond, seeing a spider web. But nature is the entire natural world. And nature is the inhospitable as well as the hospitable. Nature is death as well as life. You know, when you talk about nature, that's the entire cosmos, the entire natural order. But the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund is pushing for granting rights to nature. Here's what it says. I'm reading to you from the proposal. It says, persons and people have the fundamental rights guaranteed in this Constitution of Ecuador, and in the international human rights instruments. Nature is subject to those rights given by this Constitution and law. Every person, people, community, or nationality will be able to demand the recognition of rights for nature before the public organisms. The application and interpretation of these rights will follow the related principles established in the Constitution. All right, let's be really clear. You can't rob your neighbor. That's illegal. You can't go next door and take his car. You can't go next door and take his property. You can't go next door and take his television, his personal computer. But guess what? You can go in your backyard if you have a fruit tree and pluck an orange, an apple, a lime, an apricot off the respective tree. And guess what? That isn't stealing. But if nature has rights, just like human rights, then the entire equation is completely thrown over. The biblical worldview in which human beings are told to exercise both stewardship and dominion is completely undone, and nature is just another ism that has human rights. Now, again, that worldview can't work, but it can be very, very destructive of humanity to prove that point. I'll be right back. All right, so here we are. What do we live in? We live in a very strange world, and we're the people who are supposed to know that up front. We are the people, as Christians, who are supposed to know that there is a great deal of confusion out there, and a lot of it isn't ignorance, okay? Ignorance is one problem. A lot of it is just the evidence of bad patterns of thinking. And these bad patterns of thinking are deeply ingrained in the way human beings have socialized each other to think. We sometimes reinforce these bad thoughts among each other. And one of the things that really is a matter of great concern in this particular moment is that we have so many bad ideas getting traction out there. Now, let's just take one for example, because it's been so germane to this conversation. Let's take the idea of animal rights. Now, what do animals deserve? Well, animals deserve, first of all, insofar as human beings have engagement with them, to be treated with respect. Now, when they're treated with respect, that doesn't mean that we necessarily keep them alive. Because we understand that there are uses for animals that have been given to us, and that sometimes that requires the death of the animal. Now, if you accept that, even for one moment, even for one animal in one place at one time, then you have already decided that animals are not the same as human beings, because you would never be able to make that argument concerning a human being. So when you talk about animal rights and you use the word rights, insofar as you have even a shred of a biblical worldview, you're not talking about rights in the same way you're talking about human rights. When you're talking about human rights, they are based upon the fact that human beings are distinct from the rest of creation, that human beings are indeed beings having a particular consciousness, and that consciousness being evidence of the fact that human beings are made in the image of God. And when we say that human beings are made in the image of God, we mean that the Creator specifically, intentionally created one species, one being, to reflect His glory and to accomplish His purposes on earth. And that's why human beings can obey or disobey the Word of God. Animals can't. And that is why human beings, we understand, are sinners, and we don't speak that way of animals. That's why human beings are distinct, both in terms of status and in terms of accountability. And here is the bottom line in all of this. If you deny the distinctiveness of human persons, of human beings, if you deny the status of humanity is distinct from the rest of creation, you have no room whatsoever for the gospel, at least for any gospel which is about coming to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and being made right with God. All you're left with is an ecological gospel about how this earth may be preserved as an end unto itself, human beings being just one little part of this accidental universe along with all others. Now, Christians need to wake up and understand we have an environmental and ecological responsibility. We have a responsibility even to the animal kingdom to treat that kingdom as stewards with respect, because after all, they too were made by the Creator who made us, and they were made for His glory. But when it comes to the confusion between animals and humanity, if we get that confused, we've got everything confused. Folks, go home and hug your family with a whole new meaning. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.